This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
We are halfway home, for the love of God, on Ben and Woods 97.3 The Fan. It's good to be here with you. I'm Woodsy. That's Paul Reindel, the executive producer. Ben Higgins, your friendly neighborhood sports anchor, joins us as well. Been a fun one today, this morning. I actually, during Don't Do This, was having a panic attack, which is a weird thing to happen. And I don't think it's brought on by, like, arguing about baseball. It just happens. It's the weirdest thing. You ever get panic attacks, Benny?
Yes, I think so.
Do you think? You're not sure?
You feel like you're going to have like a heart attack and die?
Yeah.
Yeah, then I've had a couple of those.
Mine go, they start in my chest, and it feels like there's an elephant that's standing firmly on my chest. If you go back and watch the video during Don't Do This, you'll see me like fighting through it. My ears start to pop as well. My ears get real. They feel like they're filled up with something. And it's the weirdest feeling to go through. I'm over it now, but dude, it's the first time that's ever happened in the middle of a show.
Never had one during a show.
No, I don't think so. I don't think
I've had one during a show either. I haven't had one in a while. So if you've ever experienced a panic attack, and I'm not even 100% sure that that's what I've had, but I think most of us probably do at some point. The first one or two are very scary. Because
Oh, yeah.
You don't know what's happening to you. You think it's a medical issue and that, you know, it's time to call the ambulance. And then it kind of passes. And you know, as I've had a couple of them over the years, and I don't think I have particularly severe ones, and it's been a while, if I recognize right away, like you seem to be able to recognize right away that that's what's happening at least.
After so many over the years, I know exactly.
You can just kind of lean into it and write it out for a second and go, okay, I know what this is. I know this is just my body playing a little trick on me. Give it a couple of minutes and hopefully it'll pass and you'll go, why did that happen?
Yeah.
I'm sorry for that for you.
It's gnarly. It's not a heart attack, Edgar. It's not a stroke.
You're trying to give him a panic attack here, Edgar?
I've had these before. It's the weirdest thing. And like Hannah will be talking to me sometimes, and I'll just have to hold up a hand. I'm like, I just got to get through it. I had one on Mother's Day. We're driving to her mom's house, and she's talking to me, and I'm like, I can't talk right now. So I don't know what it is, but it just happens, man. It's so weird when it happens. So I'll be all right. I'm good.
You, I will commend you. You are very forthright and honest about all of your mental
struggles
that you've had, that I'm not the same way. I find it hard to necessarily admit my shortcomings and flaws, at least on the radio in front of, you know, our entire audience. And you are very open. And I think that's an incredible service. And I hope tier ones out there, Paulie, I hope they appreciate how raw Woods can be sometimes and show, you know, the good and the bad, and that it's okay. You know, I think it helps people out there just knowing that life isn't always perfect.
Even
for us, we love what we do. I think we get along really well. We're in a good situation here. Can't really ask for anything more than what we've got, but that doesn't make everything perfect all the time in our life, and it doesn't prevent you from having to go through panic attacks and things like that at times.
I had such a crap day as a dad yesterday, too. That probably didn't help. You just have those good days and bad days when you're a parent sometimes where you're like, this is great. My son and I were arguing about a baseball glove, and it's really been sticking in my craw. Like, I got him a glove. Our pal Baseball Nick gave him a glove a couple years ago. He's little, just learning the game. And can't break. He's got tiny little hands, right? Like, they're teeny tiny little hands. And he couldn't get it. You know, we're trying to break it in. It won't break in. And so he's been using that. You know those, like, Padres? Like, they're almost like giveaway gloves. Like, they're like plastic, you know? They're not leather. They're not real leather.
Right.
Kid picks everything. Everything with that glove. And he's, you know, he wants a real glove, though, because he's about to start kind of real baseball. And I said, yeah, man, you know, get your real glove, or let's work on breaking that one in. Go down to Dick's yesterday. We tried 15 gloves on. It doesn't work, right? And I'm like, I don't know what to tell you, man. Like, we got to work on the one that we have at home. And then he got all pissy with me. And he's like, fine, I just won't play baseball anymore. And I looked at him, and that's when I got hot. And I was like, don't threaten me. Like, I'm not going to be the dad that forces you to play baseball. Like, if you want to play baseball, that's on you. So we actually got, like, in a – well, we argue like we're adults, me and my six-year-old, because he acts like an adult, and I treat him like one. And we're arguing back and forth, and we argued about it all night. And I went to bed, you know, pissed off, and he went to bed pissed off. I walked in this morning, gave him a kiss on his forehead, and told him I was sorry. It was a bad parental day, and I hate bad parental days.
Does anyone, and this is a real question for tier ones, anybody who is a parent, does anyone ever think, I am a really good parent? Like, I am a great parent.
You feel like there are days when you have it clocked, like you've got it all figured out. You got their diet right. They're eating all the stuff that they like it, and it's healthy. And you feel like, I'm really knocking this out of the park. It's such a fleeting moment. It's maybe 15 minutes of like, yeah, I got these little turds figured out.
And no,
I got them sleeping.
There are moments where you feel like you're doing it right. But I think ultimately, I've never 100% felt like I'm like, oh yeah, I'm a great parent.
Right.
I am great at certain things about being a parent. I'm very supportive. I'm patient. I'm understanding. But then I always feel like I'm lacking in terms of, do I need to be harder on my kids sometimes?
Do I need to be softer on my kids?
I'm not a great disciplinarian when it comes to, you know, making sure. Am I not setting them up for success enough by being too understanding and too patient, knowing that, you know, life is hard. Hey, you guys are doing great. You know, really proud of you. They're really good kids. I don't feel like I don't want to be that dad that's always, you know, oh, yeah, but you could be doing more. Yay, that's great, but there's always more. But how do you ever inspire someone to be greater if you're not kind of, you know, pushing a little bit more? So where do you find that right line? I never feel like you're completely dialed in, like you're in the right spot. Like, oh, I'm just the right amount of understanding, but motivational, but disciplinarian. It just never feels like you're in the right zone as a parent.
Yeah, honestly, and like the game was so secondary to me last night after my crap dad moment that, yeah, I was pissed. You know, I really am pissed about the game, but my crap dad moment is really what's been sticking in my craw all day. And probably is the cause of my anxiety attack. And I think that's exactly what it is. I went to the bathroom. My wife sent me a video. You know what he was doing this morning? Had the glove, and he had the little mallet, and he was beating it to break it in. Yeah, I'm about to cry. So it was just one of those moments where I was like, yeah, I'm pissed that they lost and everything else. But I was really mostly mad at myself for just being an absolute turd of a father yesterday.
I think Carrie has the best comment I've seen this morning. She said, I heard a long time ago, if you question if you're a good parent, then you are a good parent.
Bad parents don't ask that question. That's really, really good.
I like that.
I read something, too, that said, parenting is really hard for parents that care. You know? And I went, all right, that's fine. But, you know, it just one of those days, and now all you do is you just try to be better today and be more patient. I'm not the world's most patient person, man. But I am. Margie says,
I am the world's most patient person, and I don't think that's always the right way to go either, though, Woods. Like, I sometimes wish I had a little more Woods, like, snap temper in me a little bit.
It is funny because Ben and I give each other a lot of, like, you know, Ben is, his kids are older, and my kids are younger, and Ben's like, Ben will be like, why are you so hard on your kids? I'm like, why are you so easy on yours? It's just one of those weird things that happens. Margie says, wait till your boys want Bolt batting gloves, which are $100 each for batting gloves. Oh, guess who? Don't let him hear that, dude. He will.
I'm sure Costco has some batting gloves that are just fine. Maybe better. Man. Who knows? Who knows? There's no reason to spend $130 on batting gloves.
Yep. It's tough, man. It was that was a tough night for me, honestly. And then the game thrown on top of it was rough as well. But, you know, listen, you just like baseball, you live and fight another day, you know?
What's the here's my parental dilemma. We got a couple more minutes here in foreplay. We never really got to foreplay this morning because we got right into the game. So I just need a quick little respite from it. So living in San Diego, knowing how high the cost of living is, and how difficult it is to, you know, get a place of your own, even with, like, roommates and pay rent. When is it okay to, like, try to push the kids out the door at some point?
That's a great
question. I don't think that it's even fair to ask. I mean, my 18-year-old's got a job. 20-year-old's looking right now as in between. But they're both good boys. You know, when is it like, am I being a bad parent by not kicking them out of the nest at some point?
The kick out move is tough. The kick out move is really hard. I saw something too that said, like, hey man, if your kids leave home and they try and they don't get it done, it's like, hey man, if things get too tough, if things get too hairy out there, you can't swing it, you always have a place here. I do agree with that. I do want to raise independent thinkers and independent guys that want to go out and do it on their own. But man, I'm also not, it's going to be a hard line to take of like, sorry, pal, you're 18. Hit the door. Now, I wanted to go. Soon as I got a chance to leave the nest, I flew away. But guess what? When things got hairy, guess where I had a place to go? I had a place to go when I was home. That makes your decision-making a little different, too.
Yeah. Courtney's on the line calling in here to Ben and Woods this morning. Hello, Courtney.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
So I love the question about am I a good parent or not. And when our firstborn was born and then growing into his toddler years, he was such an easy kid to raise. We're like, we're such good parents. Like, we've got this. I don't know what people are complaining about. Like, no terrible twos, anything. And then the next one came along and just gave us a total, like, ride for our money. I mean, he just put us through the ringer. So I think the fact that you apologized at the end of – or this morning – and then at the end of the day last night, I think that just, you know, it shows you're human and everybody makes mistakes and it teaches your kids, you know, compassion and empathy. And so owning up to your mistakes, I think, is one of the biggest lessons you can teach your kids.
Thank you.
Good job.
No, I appreciate it. And yeah, and honestly, that has been the mood dictator for me. Not Manny swinging at a first pitch fastball after a guy walks bases loaded. It really is. I mean, I'm just going to be honest with you. I hate that loss. Manny needs to do better. Manny needs to do better. He's got to do better. He makes too much money to fail in that scenario. That being said, I'm too good of a dad to be as crap of a dad as I was last night. And I think that's what's kind of bothering me today.
So. Well, that works for you because you're human and, you know, you have your ups and downs. Everyone knows I'm not really human.
That's fair. It
doesn't totally apply to me. I'm a bit of an alien when it comes to certain things.
Yeah,
so.
That's fair.
I may need a different approach entirely.
So. I mean, it's hard. I mean, booting your kids out at 18 for, like, when they don't have anywhere to go or like any direction,
I'm not gonna do that.
You can't do
it's
it.
Not gonna do that.
Then again, you also don't want them to be 40 and
right.
be like, Dad, the meatloaf. You know, like you can't. It can't happen. It's a fine line. You got.
My mom was a great mom.
Yeah.
Single mom. I made her life hell when I was a teenager and in high school. And when I got into San Diego State, it was the only big school that I wanted to go to. And when I got in, it was done. I mean, I was talking to my counselor, like, how do I make this happen? What are student loans?
See you later.
And I'm done. And my mom's like, she knew this would be a good fit for me. She knew it would work out well. I didn't know a single person in San Diego. And she's always like, you know, Highline Community College is here. You could live at home. And I'm like, I know you want me to stay, but you got to let me go. And
she did. Let the bird fly.
And she knew that.
I tell my wife all the time, don't you dare. If I'm dead and gone, let them both go live on the East Coast, live on the, like, they'll always come back here because why wouldn't you, right? Well, they'll always matriculate back to San Diego. That I'm not worried about. But let them go, you know, cut their wings a little bit and cut their teeth in a big city or a big college or whatever. But whatever they want to do is fine. So that's my big reason I probably had a mini meltdown on the air this morning, so I do apologize.
All right. Mental health and parental talk aside, we do have to get back to the Padres discussion.
Do we?
And, well, a little bit. We don't have to relitigate the end of the game yesterday. And you know, we said our part. You know, I don't have a problem with Manny swinging at the first pitch.
I wish he would have come through.
I thought maybe it wasn't the best pitch to swing at, but when I saw that he hit it 105 miles an hour, I mean, maybe he needed to wait for something that was a little more up in the zone. That's splitting hairs, though. That's splitting hairs. Other people disagree. They think Manny should have been taken all the way until, you know, what?
Till you get one, I guess.
One, two strikes. I mean, what happens when you fall behind and put yourself in a bad position? I don't know.
We got great comments in the chat about the parenthood. Robert says, my first kid made me love parenting, made me think it was easy. My three-year-old has me questioning being a father and if I'm good at it. And then a good suggestion here for you, Benny, from Luke says, Woods, check out the Glove Shack for Bo. Ben, charge the boys modest rent to stay home. Put it in savings for them. It's a good bit.
That's not a bad idea.
What would rent be at Ben's house? Coming up next.
First, a little check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Once again, we're probably the only show on a sports radio station in America that hasn't done an in-depth, deep dive into the first game of the NFL season being announced.
Oh, when is that?
It is September 5th. It'll be the Chiefs and the Ravens in a rematch of the AFC Championship game that came out yesterday. So, as always, the Super Bowl champs getting to host that first game. Also came out today that the second game for the Chiefs going to be Chiefs-Bengals. So, two premium games in the first 2 weeks for the Kansas City Chiefs against two of the other top quarterbacks and contenders in the AFC right off the bat. I mean,
I wish I had a team to root for.
Remember the
it's like that's the whole problem with with like, you know, we talked about the NBA last week and I'm like, I think I'd have a more vested interest if I had a team to root for.
Remember the Chiefs lost their opener last year,
yep,
defending their Super Bowl
to
title.
The Jets. Jets?
No, it wasn't the Jets. It was at the Was it the Bengals last year?
I feel like I lost a tremendous amount of money on that game. I remember. But I, you, I,
The Lions.
The Lions.
Dan Campbell and the Lions. 21-20.
That's right.
Of course, you know, major panic time for the Chiefs. Obviously, hangover from the Super Bowl. They ended up actually doing all right last year.
Played pretty well.
They did win another Super Bowl at the end of the season, in fact, as the two-time defending champions. But, yeah, they've got a gnarly stretch to open the season, at least for the first two games with the Ravens and the Bengals right off the top of the season. So we are getting into schedule release territory. It's going to happen, I think they said, later this week. I saw the features about how all the teams now take this as their social media teams. It's like the biggest day of the season for them because they all have to come up with the most clever way
to release the schedule,
whether it's celebrities or, you know, Twitter threads of different, you know, the schedules as Pop-Tarts or whatever. They're all coming up. It's like a competition among the teams as to who can do the schedule release better than everybody else.
It is a good, it's good content. It really is. And hey, I'm, you know, listen, I know you hate the Chargers. They've been doing a pretty good job with their social media.
They actually were interviewing the Chargers and they had their, it was ESPN did a feature and they had the woman who runs their like social media accounts and probably the best thing that the Chargers do. And they asked her, is schedule release your Super Bowl? And she goes, well, I mean, we'd like the Super Bowl to be a Super Bowl, but I guess for now, we're just going to have to settle for the schedule release.
It's so true, dude. Well, we just played our World Series over the weekend.
Right.
So, I mean, we can relate, certainly, but they do a great job. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. I want you to, you know, I'm not a big fan of rooting for them or really any team in the NFL. I love matchups. I love fantasy. Which, I love the players, but.
Which team was it? I feel like it was. They showed the logos of each of the teams they were going to play and asking like random people on the street, which team
that
is this?
Was
that was great.
Was genius, man.
The flaming thumbtacks of Tennessee.
Yeah. So good. So good. All right, yeah, that's an interesting interesting day for sure. Like I said, I wish I had a team to get super fired up about. Now the Chargers always end up drafting my beloved Fighting Irish on their team. They won a year at least. So but the Harbaugh connection for me is I'm now free and clear of ever having to root for the Chargers because I don't like Jim Harbaugh. And it's a good hire and all that, like good for you guys, but I'm not a Jim Harbaugh guy.
I'm not as sold on the hire. I mean, maybe it's because I'm a Chargers hater through and through at
for
this
sure.
point, but I still feel like even though he's had success literally everywhere he's gone, to me he's like he's just a little too weird necessarily for long-term success in the NFL. I know he was there in the Niners and you know it went well for a while and then he went back to college. Sometimes things that play well in college don't always like Marty Schottenheimer would couple of years, yeah, people would get fired up for him, and then they kind of get tired of Marty Schottenheimer. And I wonder if they'll get tired of Jim Harbaugh after a couple of years with the L.A. Chargers.
If you win, they won't. It cures everything.
Yeah, but I don't think they're going to win right away. They got too much salary cap, you know, digging out to do with the new general manager, some rebuilding, obviously losing some of the key stars. Maybe they'll surprise me and they'll be better right away. I think it's going to take a little bit of time if they are ever going to turn it around.
Story I saw yesterday about Jared Goff signing a huge extension.
Yeah.
That made me very happy for him. I like him a lot. I like Jared Goff a lot. And I thought, man, that's a lot of dough for Jared Goff, but also like he's a good quarterback.
The show that comes on before us, the national show, Maggie and Perloff, had a huge debate this morning. Who's the better quarterback having the better career, Jared Goff or Dak Prescott?
Jared Goff, I think. Yeah.
He's certainly taken his team deeper a couple of times, got to the Super Bowl with the Rams, got to the NFC Championship last year with the Lions. Dak Prescott always puts up bigger numbers than Jared Goff does consistently, but always disappoints at the end of the season. Of course, Dak Prescott is looking for a big contract. The question was brought up because is he going to get a bigger contract than Jared Goff just got, or is he going to have to take a lesser contract?
I don't know.
Than the one Jared Goff just got?
I don't know.
It was a good story last year after getting traded from the Rams to have some success with the Lions in that franchise after Stafford, of course, goes and takes his team and wins the Super Bowl. That would have to sting for anyone to have someone replace you and then go in and have the ultimate success right on your heels. As an athlete, that has to sting, right?
Yes.
So to get you know, the Lions to a place they had not been literally like ever. That was a good story last year for Jared Goff. Can they make the next step? Can they get to the Super Bowl? They'll have a chance this year. I would think that they'll be one of the favorites in the NFC, but they'll still have to get through the 49ers. I mean, they're not going anywhere. They're going to be a good team as well again. They got a young, cheap quarterback. Yep. Mr. Irrelevant will be back, and you know, another healthy season. I'd imagine they'll be very good. So we'll see what happens. A little NFL talk unexpectedly here on Ben and Woods on a Tuesday morning. All right, we'll come back. Jesse Agler is going to join us. We'll talk about his perspectives from last night's disappointing loss and last chance to get in Incorporator Words. I haven't seen a ton of suggestions, so send them right now in the chat or to our Ben and Woods Twitter feed.
Some smartass, and I loved it, by the way. Some smartass said, have Jesse work in the word clutch. Impossible. And I went, you know what? SOB. That was a good one. That was a good one.
All right, get in your suggestions now. That's coming up next with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan. Got Jesse Agler standing by. This hour on 97.3 The Fan is brought to you by The Farmer's Dog, fresh human-grade dog food. From healthier weight to more energy, when you switch your dog's food to The Farmer's Dog, the effects can feel magical. What sorcery is this? None at all. It's just real food made for the health of dogs. Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/radio. Jesse has had some amazing calls lately. Padres taking 2 of 3 from the Dodgers. The walk-off on Friday night by Luis Arraez. It's been fantastic. Of course, baseball doesn't always work that way. And last night, we came up just short. We'll talk to Jesse about it right after the check traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. As we welcome Jesse Agler here to Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan, I can only imagine you were ready to bust out with a big-time call last night in the seventh inning and then in the eighth inning and then in the ninth inning. I mean, just right there, so many moments that could have been Jesse last night and just unfortunately never were.
Said, sometimes you're the fuzzy end of the lollipop or something like that. I don't remember what the term is, but yeah, I mean, little PTSD 2023 flashback night, you know, with all those missed opportunities with guys in scoring position. You know, I'm kind of the belief, and we'll get to last year in a second, but generally speaking, that if you're creating the opportunities on a regular basis, you're going to be fine. You know, what you don't want to do is be in a situation where you don't have those chances, and then maybe, you know, you cash it in every once in a while. I would rather create the opportunities with regularity and sort of know that there are going to be games like last night, which are kind of weird. Now, the problem last year, of course, was there came a point when we couldn't say that anymore because it was happening pretty much every time that they weren't cashing in those opportunities. But that has not been the case this year. And so hopefully, you know, we'll look back at last night as kind of a one-off anomaly. I do think there was probably an element of effectively wild for the Rockies pitchers. No one in baseball ever wants to say that that's a thing. But I always have believed that it is, whether you want to talk about the A.J. Burnett no-hitter at Qualcomm or anything else. You know, right? Like, sometimes you just – it's like, how am I supposed to swing here because it's all over the place? All right, I'll take my walk. And then eventually, you know, you get in a situation where you're looking for maybe something more than a walk, and the result doesn't go your way. So, you know, I've always kind of believed that that is a thing, although I can't ever seem to get anybody to say that it is.
Effectively wild is awful. I had a bit years ago, Jesse, and I got roasted for it, but it was a bit. It was a joke. I said, that's why adult league is harder than the major leagues. Yeah, their stuff is better in the big leagues, but nobody knows where the plate is. So you go up there and you
it's
make
like the first year in Little League that I moved from coach pitch, when I hit probably like 600, to kid pitch, where I was hit by a pitch every other time up. There was nothing more frustrating in my playing career. So maybe that's the reason I believe this is a thing, because I'm flashing back to being 8 years old. But
it's like, funny, man.
That's a funny bit, by the way.
It is a funny bit, yeah. And I like made the case of why. Like, well, first of all, you guys play on much nicer fields, okay? You get everybody, you get massages pregame, you hit white ball, you actually get batting practice, and every pitcher, sure, they throw hard, sure, they have exploding sliders, but at least they're around the plate, you know? It was a bit, but the effectively wild guys that you see, you're like, oh, God, this is a nightmare. Guy that throws, you know, in our league, 85 is tough. It's tough, but it's like, I'd rather face that guy.
That's very funny.
You know, something that you hear a lot from Little League all the way probably to adult league baseball is the axiom, hey, when a pitcher is wild, you got to take a pitch or two. And while I do think that applies, and I've gotten some pushback this morning from some tier ones who disagree, I don't think it really applies in Major League Baseball. Even after the walks had loaded the bases, when Manny Machado is coming up to the plate, I'm expecting him to hunt first pitch. What do you think kind of is your thought process there as Manny's stepping to the plate, Jesse?
You guys were just talking about the Arise walk-off. That was a first pitch, right? What was Michael Bush's walk-off at Wrigley last week, first pitch? I mean, I can go on. You know, I mean, like, yeah, sometimes you know coming in, like, all right, I'm probably going to get, you know, the first pitch I got here. And especially, I would say, when a guy is wild, all right, I'm locking in on this first pitch. And if it's close, I'm going, because it might be the only one, you know, that I really have a sense of where it is. I don't have a problem with it. Obviously, the result was miserable with the way that the game ended. But from like a philosophical standpoint, I don't think there's any issue with that. You've got a guy, as you said, on the ropes. You know he's trying to get ahead. You know he's trying to throw a strike, because if he puts himself 2-0, he's going to start spinning out there. And you're Manny Machado. You're one of the most talented hitters that's ever walked on planet Earth. So I have no issue at all with that. Obviously, it did not go well. Couldn't have been any easier for the Rockies infield the way that that one worked out. But, yeah, I mean, all those opportunities last night, it was weird. It was different. And certainly at the end of the day, very frustrating.
It was, man. And, you know, you could point to a bunch of different moments in that game. And baseball is a weird sport. You can feel yeah. like sometimes, man, we lost that game in the third inning or whatever. What, not last night, but, you know, maybe in the seventh and maybe in the eighth and definitely lost it in the ninth because you ran out of chances. But baseball is that weird. When that pop fly drop between Tatis and Merrill, I went, man, now that's one you gotta make a play for your pitcher. You got to make a play for your team. Cannot give up runs in that instance, because that's not a team that scores a ton of runs. Giving them free runs is brutal, brutal in that spot.
Yeah, I mean, that ended up being the difference in the game, right? I mean, that was the final run that the Rockies got. That was frustrating. There was a lot that was frustrating. But, you know, for me, particularly last night, you can, in a way, ignore everything that happened in the first six innings. Because the Padres had every opportunity they could ever ask for, 7-8-9. You know, and so, like, put Randy Vasquez aside, put some of the defensive issues aside, you know, whatever. You had your shot. You know, you survived all of that in a way, right? Because you were in a position, you know, late in the game to do something. Now, your point is certainly valid. You can look back at those things and be like, well, if that didn't happen, they would have been in a different spot later in the game. But, you know, they had their shot. They had their shots, and last night it just didn't happen. And as I said at the beginning, I mean, as long as this doesn't turn into something from last year, and I don't expect it to, you know, where they can never get a hit with runner in scoring position, then you know what? You chalk it up to, as you said, the weirdness of baseball, what I always refer to as the beautiful stupidity of baseball. And last night had a lot of stupidity, there's no doubt. It was from the start a weird game. I turned to Tony and, like, I don't know, after the second inning, and I was like, I'm so off kilter right now. It's like something about the pace and the timing, it just felt weird. And then weird things just kind of continued to happen the entire rest of the night.
Talking to Jesse Agler, and we mentioned it earlier, but pointing out that Jackson Merrill could have maybe gotten that one also ignores the fact that that might have been Jackson Merrill's
yes.
best game
so good.
As a pro. He was all over the outfield making catches, had the great double play, hit the ball hard, including like a home run that I didn't even know he had that kind of, you know, swing in him.
That was Harper-esque right there, man. It really was. From the left side, the bat flip and everything was pretty legit.
That was something to watch last night, Jesse.
He is very real deal. I mean, look, we've all been watching these games and hopefully listening to them here on 97.3 The Fan. But Jackson Merrill, he's the real deal. And the biggest compliment I can give him is that you can just tell he's never been trying to do too much at any point. He is staying within himself in such a sincere way, which is what we always ask of guys, you know, when they're first coming up, particularly at a young age. Hey, don't press, don't try too hard. But that goes against human nature. And he is just sort of almost like a robot with emotion, if you will. He's a robot while he's approaching things, but then when something happens, he turns into an emotional human being. You saw that last night. He was all fired up and red-faced running around the bases.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I mean, that continued into the dugout afterwards. Like, that was a really, really big moment for him and for the team in yesterday's game. But it's like he's able to, like, control it all and bottle it all until it doesn't need to be bottled anymore. And that is a remarkable thing for a 21-year-old who's 40-whatever games into his major league career to try and pull off. You know, there's a reason the Padre people have obsessively talked about his makeup the last couple of years and the kind of guy and the kind of player and the kind of competitor he is. I just couldn't be any more impressed with him. He's hitting 290. He's like the second leading hitter on the team. 291, excuse me. I don't want to shortchange him. And he's been such a really nice presence at the bottom of the order. I could go on and on and on about what we're seeing out of Jackson Merrill. Look, there's still rookie stuff that's going on. I'm sure there will be slumps, you know, to come and everything like that. But right now, you could not ask any more out of this guy than what you've gotten.
Yeah, and there's plenty of unsung heroes on this team, and some sung heroes as well. Jerkson Profar, what a tank that was last night as well. And, you know, it one of those great ABs off Dakota Hudson, which we really didn't see early in the game, Jesse. I looked up, and I think we were in like the sixth, and he had like 65, 70 pitches. And it's hard because, you know, the Padres have been more aggressive this year based on just out of the chute from opening day. And they have had a lot more productive outs and things like that. Man, when they don't execute and Dakota Hudson is shoving it on you, those are the games that's tough to stomach sometimes.
Yeah, it was a little bit weird last night, and I haven't read all the Colorado papers and websites yet. I will later on this morning. But, you know, one of the things that we picked up on probably in like the fourth or fifth inning last night was that Hudson was pitching totally differently yesterday than he had been. He was featuring his curveball in a way that he never does. And obviously the guy has been having like just a tremendous amount of trouble. So obviously it makes some sense, you know, that he might try something
switch
different. But, you know, we saw this guy a couple of weeks ago. Here, I got the numbers. I'm pulling them up off my paper here. You know, he was not doing what he normally does. The curveball coming into last night was his least used pitch. In his most recent start before yesterday, he threw it 14% of the time. Against the Padres a couple weeks ago, he threw it 11% of the time. Last night, he threw it almost 30% of the time.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, the early attack was probably based upon the idea that you were going to see more than sliders,
yeah.
Which ended up not being the case. And so to his credit, he was landing the curveball. It was working. He could throw it for strikes. And throwing strikes had been his issue all season long. You remember all the walks he issued against the Padres at Coors in that awful day game. So, you know, I'm not doing the tip your cap thing, but he pitched differently and better than he pitched at any other point this season. And that probably, at least for a couple of innings, kept the Padres off balance.
That's so fascinating to me, the chess match that is baseball. And Mike Schilt, you know, probably them telling their team too before, hey, listen, what he's been doing hasn't been working, but you have to kind of stick with what's on paper. This is how he's been trying to get guys out, and for him to completely change it like that, yeah, it may explain away some of the early inning failures.
I think you have to be fair because, you know, the Dodgers can say, well, we homered a bunch off Michael King the first time we faced him. Why
right.
are we so bad
yeah.
this time?
It
doesn't
yeah.
account for the fact that Michael King was much better
Nasty.
Last Friday. And
Nasty.
Before we get to the Incorporated, I just wanted to get back to that weekend against the Dodgers since we didn't talk to you specifically that Friday night game. I was there, Jesse. It would, had you seen a better, like a game where two pitchers on both sides were as locked in as that night? I mean, that was pretty incredible.
It's, you know, that's one of the things that makes it feel like playoff baseball. We had that, you know, that walk-off game at Wrigley, too. Very similar kind of feel. I mean, look, not to sound like an old person or whatever, but like that's baseball at its best to me, is two starting pitchers who are dominating and working deep into the game, because that means that one run or those two runs you might be able to scratch out, or that one big swing you have that turns into a home run, that is the difference in the game. And look, between the crowd, the size of the crowd, the volume of the crowd, the pitching that we got, the sort of dramatics of it all, to me, that's what makes a regular season game feel like a playoff game. And, you know, we drop that, right? You know, a handful of times every year, hey, playoff atmosphere here tonight. But it kind of goes to another level when you get something like that. And the one game at Wrigley really felt that way. The middle game, you know, a couple of the Dodger games felt that way. But, like, for me as a fan, there is nothing better than watching two starting pitchers at the absolute top of their game just mowing guys down. Obviously, you know, Tony sometimes disagrees with that, as he was a hitter, and he doesn't like, you know, to talk about how only the pitcher is dominating. But, I mean, it was great baseball. Great baseball. Entertaining baseball with the buzz, the whole thing. I mean, the Padres, just to step back, you know, from the Dodgers series, I think have been a much more watchable team this year than they were the last couple of years. And those early swings that you were bemoaning, that's a big part of it. That's a big part of it. You know, I'm old enough to remember people getting upset about Trent Grisham taking fastballs down the middle. So, you know, I mean, I've enjoyed watching them this year. They've played a very entertaining brand of baseball, Have there been frustrating moments? Of course, but every team has frustrating moments over the course of 162. And yeah, man, we've been treated to some really, really great baseball as of late.
By the way, those good fast pitch games sometimes make it hard to get an incorporator word in during the nine innings.
Last week, you have to do it in the post game.
All the way to the post game.
That was the game, that's right.
That was the game last week.
For Hector Neris. Can I publicly apologize to Hector Neris? I apologize.
For calling him,
what was the word?
Zaftig?
Zaftig.
Hector Neris. Yeah, well, you had to get it in somehow, and now you've got a new word that Woods is going to give you that you've got to get in for tonight's game for the Incorporated.
Yeah, Tier 1 Derek sent this in to my DM, and I almost
didn't believe this
He
one,
didn't
Jesse.
Believe it was a word. I started laughing hysterically. Go ahead, Paulie.
Sprained.
Now, you might think, oh,
like
man.
He sprained his ankle?
That's what I was going to say. Manny Machado sprained his elbow.
He does.
No.
Sprained his ankle.
I mean, good luck. Here, the definition is it's a piece of otter's dung.
What?
Otter's dung.
Why? What's so special about the otter's excrement that it gets its own word?
I don't know.
That doesn't make any sense. Got Jesse Agler standing by. This hour on 97.3 The Fan is brought to you by the Farmer's Dog, fresh human-grade dog food. From healthier weight to more energy, when you switch your dog's food to the Farmer's Dog, the effects can feel magical. What sorcery is this? None at all. It's just real food made for the health of dogs. Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/radio. Jesse has had some amazing calls lately. Padres taking 2 of 3 from the Dodgers. The walk-off on Friday night by Luis Arraez. It's been fantastic. Of course, baseball doesn't always work that way. And last night, we came up just short. We'll talk to Jesse about it right after the check traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. As we welcome Jesse Agler here to Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan, I can only imagine you were ready to bust out with a big-time call last night in the seventh inning and then in the eighth inning and then in the ninth inning. I mean, just right there, so many moments that could have been Jesse last night and just unfortunately never were.
Said, sometimes you're the fuzzy end of the lollipop or something like that. I don't remember what the term is, but yeah, I mean, little PTSD 2023 flashback night, you know, with all those missed opportunities with guys in scoring position. You know, I'm kind of the belief, and we'll get to last year in a second, but generally speaking, that if you're creating the opportunities on a regular basis, you're going to be fine. You know, what you don't want to do is be in a situation where you don't have those chances, and then maybe, you know, you cash it in every once in a while. I would rather create the opportunities with regularity and sort of know that there are going to be games like last night, which are kind of weird. Now, the problem last year, of course, was there came a point when we couldn't say that anymore because it was happening pretty much every time that they weren't cashing in those opportunities. But that has not been the case this year. And so hopefully, you know, we'll look back at last night as kind of a one-off anomaly. I do think there was probably an element of effectively wild for the Rockies pitchers. No one in baseball ever wants to say that that's a thing, but I always have believed that it is. Whether you want to talk about the A.J. Burnett no-hitter at Qualcomm or anything
else.
You know, right? Like sometimes you just, it's like, how am I supposed to swing here? Because it's all over the place. All right, I'll take my walk. And then eventually, you know, you get in a situation where you're looking for maybe something more than a walk, and the result doesn't go your way. So, you know, I've always kind of believed that that is a thing, although I can't ever seem to get anybody to say that it is.
Effectively wild is awful. I had a bit years ago, Jesse, and I got roasted for it, but it was a bit. It was a joke. I said, that's why adult league is harder than the major leagues. Yeah, their stuff is better in the big leagues, but nobody knows where the plate is. So you go up there and you
it's
make...
Like the first year in Little League that I moved from coach pitch, when I hit probably like 600, to kid pitch, where I was hit by a pitch every other time up, there was nothing more frustrating in my playing career. So maybe that's the reason I believe this is a thing, because I'm flashing back to being 8 years old, but...
funny, man.
That's a funny bit, by the way.
It is a funny bit. And I like made the case of why. Like, well, first of all, you guys play on much nicer fields. Okay, you get everybody. You get massages pregame. You hit white ball. You actually get batting practice. And every pitcher, sure, they throw hard. Sure, they have exploding sliders. But at least they're around the plate. You know, it was a bit. But the effectively wild guys that you see, you're like, oh god, this is a nightmare. Guy that throws, you know, in our league, 85 is tough. It's tough, but it's like, I'd rather face that guy.
That's very funny.
You know, something that you hear a lot from Little League all the way probably to Adult League baseball is the axiom, hey, when a pitcher is wild, you got to take a pitch or two. And while I do think that applies, and I've gotten some pushback this morning from some tier ones who disagree, I don't think it really applies in Major League Baseball. Even after the walks had loaded the bases, when Manny Machado is coming up to the plate, I'm expecting him to hunt first pitch. What do you think kind of is your thought process there as Manny's stepping to the plate, Jesse?
You guys were just talking about the Arise walk-off. That was a first pitch, right? What was Michael Bush's walk-off at Wrigley last week, first pitch? I mean, I can go on. You know, I mean, like, yeah, sometimes you know coming in, like, all right, I'm probably going to get, you know, the first pitch I got here. And especially, I would say, when a guy is wild, all right, I'm locking in on this first pitch. And if it's close, I'm going, because it might be the only one, you know, that I really have a sense of where it is. I don't have a problem with it. Obviously, the result was miserable with the way that the game ended. But from like a philosophical standpoint, I don't think there's any issue with that. You've got a guy, as you said, on the ropes. You know he's trying to get ahead. You know he's trying to throw a strike, because if he puts himself 2-0, he's going to start spinning out there. And you're Manny Machado. You're one of the most talented hitters that's ever walked on planet Earth. So I have no issue at all with that. Obviously, it did not go well. Couldn't have been any easier for the Rockies infield the way that that one worked out. But, yeah, I mean, all those opportunities last night, it was weird, it was different, and certainly at the end of the day, very frustrating.
It was, man, and you know, you could point to a bunch of different moments in that game, and baseball's a weird sport. You can feel, yeah, like sometimes, man, we lost that game in the third inning or whatever. What, not last night, but you know, maybe in the seventh and maybe in the eighth, and definitely lost it in the ninth because you ran out of chances. But baseball is that weird. When that pop fly dropped between Tatis and Merrill, I went, man, now that's one you gotta make a play for your pitcher. You got to make a play for your team. Cannot give up runs in that instance, because that's not a team that scores a ton of runs. Giving them free runs is brutal, brutal in that spot.
Yeah, I mean, that ended up being the difference in the game, right? I mean, that was the final run that the Rockies got. That was frustrating. There was a lot that was frustrating. But, you know, for me, particularly last night, you can, in a way, ignore everything that happened in the first six innings. Because the Padres had every opportunity they could ever ask for, 7, 8, 9. You know, and so, like, put Randy Vasquez aside, put some of the defensive issues aside, you know, whatever. You had your shot. You know, you survived all of that in a way, right? Because you were in a position, you know, late in the game to do something. Now, your point is certainly valid. You can look back at those things and be like, well, if that didn't happen, they would have been in a different spot later, sure, in the game. But, you know, they had their shot. They had their shots, and last night it just didn't happen. And as I said at the beginning, I mean, as long as this doesn't turn into something from last year, and I don't expect it to, you know, where they can never get a hit with runner in scoring position, then you know what? You chalk it up to, as you said, the weirdness of baseball, what I always refer to as the beautiful stupidity of baseball. And last night had a lot of stupidity. There's no doubt. It was from the start a weird game. I turned to Tony and, like, I don't know, after the second inning, and I was like, I'm so off kilter right now. It's like something about the pace and the timing. It just felt weird, and then weird things just kind of continued to happen the entire rest of the night.
Talking to Jesse Agler, and we mentioned it earlier, but pointing out that Jackson Merrill could have maybe gotten that one also ignores the fact that that might have been Jackson Merrill's,
yes,
best game,
so good,
as a pro. He was all over the outfield making catches, had the great double play, hit the ball hard, including like a home run that I didn't even know he had that kind of, you know, swing in,
yeah,
him.
That was Harper-esque right there, man. It really was. From the left side, the bat flip and everything was pretty legit.
That was something to watch last night, Jesse.
He is very real deal. I mean, look, we've all been watching these games and hopefully listening to them here on 97.3 The Fan. But Jackson Merrill, he's the real deal. And the biggest compliment I can give him is that you can just tell he's never been trying to do too much at any point. He is staying within himself in such a sincere way, which is what we always ask of guys, you know, when they're first coming up, particularly at a young age. Hey, don't press, don't try too hard, but that goes against human nature. And he is just sort of almost like a robot with emotion, if you will. He's a robot while he's approaching things, but then when something happens, he turns into an emotional human being. You saw that last night. He was all fired up and red-faced running around the bases.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I mean, that continued into the dugout afterwards. Like, that was a really, really big moment for him and for the team in yesterday's game. But it's like he's able to, like, control it all and bottle it all until it doesn't need to be bottled anymore. And that is a remarkable thing for a 21-year-old who's 40-whatever games into his major league career to try and pull off. You know, there's a reason the Padre people have obsessively talked about his makeup the last couple of years and the kind of guy and the kind of player and the kind of competitor he is. I just couldn't be any more impressed with him. He's hitting 290. He's like the second leading hitter on the team, 291. Excuse me. I don't want to shortchange him. And he's been such a really nice presence at the bottom of the order. I could go on and on and on about what we're seeing out of Jackson Merrill. Look, there's still rookie stuff that's going on. I'm sure there will be slumps, you know, to come and everything like that. But right now, you could not ask any more out of this guy than what you've gotten.
Yeah, and there's plenty of unsung heroes on this team, and some sung heroes as well. Jerkson Profar, what a tank that was last night as well. And you know, it one of those great ABs off Dakota Hudson, which we really didn't see early in the game, Jesse. I looked up, and I think we were in like the sixth, and he had like 65, 70 pitches. And it's hard because, you know, the Padres have been more aggressive this year based on just out of the chute from opening day. And they have had a lot more productive outs and things like that. Man, when they don't execute and Dakota Hudson is shoving it on you, those are the games that's tough to stomach sometimes.
Yeah, it was a little bit weird last night, and I haven't read all the Colorado papers and websites yet. I will later on this morning. But, you know, one of the things that we picked up on probably in like the fourth or fifth inning last night was that Hudson was pitching totally differently yesterday than he had been. He was featuring his curveball in a way that he never does. And obviously the guy has been having like just a tremendous amount of trouble. So obviously it makes some sense, you know, that he might try something
switch
different. But, you know, we saw this guy a couple of weeks ago. Here, I got the numbers. I'm pulling them up off my paper here. You know, he was not doing what he normally does. The curveball coming into last night was his least used pitch. In his most recent start before yesterday, he threw it 14% of the time. Against the Padres a couple of weeks ago, he threw it 11% of the time. Last night, he threw it almost 30% of the time.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, the early attack was probably based upon the idea that you were going to see more than sliders,
yeah.
Which ended up not being the case. And so to his credit, he was landing the curveball. It was working. He could throw it for strikes. And throwing strikes had been his issue all season long. You remember all the walks he issued against the Padres at Coors in that awful day game. So, you know, I'm not doing the tip your cap thing, but he pitched differently and better than he pitched at any other point this season, and that probably, at least for a couple of innings, kept the Padres off balance.
That's so fascinating to me, the chess match that is baseball. And Mike Schilt, you know, probably them telling their team, too, before, hey, listen, what he's been doing hasn't been working, but you have to kind of stick with what's on paper. This is how he's been trying to get guys out, and for him to completely change it like that, yeah, it may explain away some of the early inning failures.
I think you have to be fair because, you know, the Dodgers can say, well, we homered a bunch off Michael King the first time we faced him. Why are we so bad this time? It doesn't account for the fact that Michael King was much better last Friday. And before we get to the Incorporated, I just wanted to get back to that weekend against the Dodgers since we didn't talk to you specifically that Friday night game. I was there, Jesse. It would, had you seen a better, like a game where two pitchers on both sides were as locked in as that night? I mean, that was pretty incredible.
It's, you know, that's one of the things that makes it feel like playoff baseball. We had that, you know, that walk-off game at Wrigley too. Very similar kind of feel. I mean, look, not to sound like an old person or whatever, but like that's baseball at its best to me. Is two starting pitchers who are dominating and working deep into the game, because that means that one run or those two runs you might be able to scratch out, or that one big swing you have that turns into a home run, that is the difference in the game. And look, between the crowd, the size of the crowd, the volume of the crowd, the pitching that we got, the sort of dramatics of it all, to me, that's what makes a regular season game feel like a playoff game. And, you know, we drop that, right? You know, a handful of times every year. Hey, playoff atmosphere here tonight. But it kind of goes to another level when you get something like that. And the one game at Wrigley really felt that way. The middle game, you know, a couple of the Dodger games felt that way. But, like, for me as a fan, there is nothing better than watching two starting pitchers at the absolute top of their game just mowing guys down. Obviously, you know, Tony sometimes disagrees with that as he was a hitter, and he doesn't like, you know, to talk about how only the pitcher is dominating. But, I mean, it was great baseball, entertaining baseball with the buzz, the whole thing. I mean, the Padres, just to step back, you know, from the Dodgers series, I think have been a much more watchable team this year than they were the last couple of years. And those early swings that you were bemoaning, that's a big part of it. That's a big part of it. You know, I'm old enough to remember people getting upset about Trent Grisham taking fastballs down the middle. So, you know, I mean, I've enjoyed watching them this year. They've played a very entertaining brand of baseball, Have there been frustrating moments? Of course, but every team has frustrating moments over the course of 162. And yeah, man, we've been treated to some really, really great baseball as of late.
By the way, those good fast pitch games sometimes make it hard to get an incorporator word in during the nine innings.
Last week, you have to do it in the post game.
All the way to the post game.
That was the game, that's right.
That was the game. Last week.
For Hector Neris. Can I publicly apologize to Hector Neris? I apologize.
For calling him,
what was the word?
Zaftig. Hector Neris. Yeah, well, you had to get it in somehow, and now you've got a new word that Woods is going to give you that you've got to get in for tonight's game for the Incorporated.
Yeah, Tier 1 Derek sent this in to my DM, and I almost
didn't believe this
He
one,
didn't
Jesse.
Believe it was a word. I started laughing hysterically. Go ahead, Paulie.
Sprained.
Now, you might think, oh,
like
man.
He sprained his ankle?
That's what I was going to say. Manny Machado sprained his elbow.
He does.
No.
Sprained his ankle.
I mean, good luck. Here, the definition is it's a piece of otter's dung.
What?
Otter's dung.
What's so special about the otter's excrement that it gets its own word?
I don't know.
That doesn't make any sense to me.
Is there another word for seal dung or dog dung? Isn't it all just dung?
Sprained.
First of all, can somebody from the San Diego Zoo call in and help us understand this?
Confirm this one for sure.
Second of all, do otters, not that I necessarily expect you guys to know this, but do otters build dams the way beavers do? And so perhaps does their dung get a special word because they use it to build their structure?
Yeah.
Wait, do beavers use their poop to build dams? I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
I don't know.
This is the Incorporator's a learning segment as well as a challenge.
Yeah,
that's true.
For Jesse Agler. Well, Jesse, good luck. We're out of time. Good luck on Sprint, and we will talk to you next Tuesday.
What a word.
See you later.
Thank you, buddy.
Jesse Agler. Sprint.
Oh, that's great. Sprint.
All right, we will come back. Paulie's got some headlines with the Rindle Report.
So you're allowed to have fun, guys. Everyone's allowed to have fun today.
Yeah. Fun is back on the menu today. With Bennett Woods on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.